This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping the local area. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builder Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Afternoon. Thanks for being here as we cover a lot of different topics around the Umpqua Valley today. A look at Safe Haven Maternity Home. Executive Director Evie Kumar, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
So how long have you been leading Safe Haven?
I have been at Safe Haven for 6 years. Actually, November 1st, I celebrated 6 years at Safe Haven.
And what was your background prior to that?
I've worked in the last 20 plus years in social services, anywhere from working with developmentally disabled adults to drug and alcohol treatment in very field. And my husband and I also run a nonprofit. We founded and run a nonprofit on our own time. So that experience is what brought me to Safe Haven.
And for Safe Haven, I know many people know it's been around for a long time, but I didn't really figure out when it began.
Safe Haven began in 1992 because what happened in 1998, this Catholic church started St. Joseph's Maternity Home, and after 4 years, they decided they would not be able to run it efficiently. So we incorporated and became Safe Haven Maternity Home with our own board of directors, our own leaders. So 32 years here in the community.
Well, that's a long time. And how would you kind of describe the focus of the nonprofit organization?
Well, I'm going to give you our mission. So Safe Haven provides a safe home environment and aftercare services to pregnant women and mothers of young children in crisis. In partnership with the community, we support them and their families through strength-based, client-focused services that meet their spiritual, emotional, physical, social, educational needs. We seek to lead them towards successful parenting, healthy, independent living, and a hope for a better future. So our main goal is to come into women who are in crisis, whether they're pregnant or have a small child, and to be able to provide them with just the basic needs of housing, and then be able to expand and give them the support they need to be productive members of the community.
So then it's not always while they're pregnant?
Not always while they're pregnant. A lot of our moms are now coming in with anywhere with toddlers and up to 3 years old, so we can have a varied range of ages of adults and children in the home.
So what's the past 6 years been like for you?
Well, a good half of that was COVID, so that was quite interesting.
Trying to run any organization, especially when you're dealing so closely with people.
It's a lot hard, but it's been, we've seen a lot of growth, a lot of expansion of our programs. Coming in 6 years ago, just struggling and trying to make ends meet like most nonprofits have, to coming in now where we are able to have a savings account, being able to have stability so that we can build a strong foundation and expand our programs into new areas.
So do you feel like you're on better footing for the long term now?
Absolutely. That's been always my goal when I came in as Safe Haven as the executive director. I told the board, I told the staff, is a solid foundation. And I feel like we're now at that solid foundation with supporters, with grantors, with the community members that we're starting to build into other programs.
It seems like a lot of times with smaller nonprofits, you're just trying to pay next month's bills. And sometimes that becomes the focus and you kind of lose touch with everything else.
That's happened to me before.
So you mentioned the organization's funding. Talk more about how you where your funding comes from.
So 13% of our funding comes from a DHS contracted. We are contracted with Child Welfare here in Douglas County. We're a return-to-parent facility. So if a mom loses their baby to the system, they're in foster care through abuse, through drug addiction, all the different causes that causes a child to enter into abuse, into a foster care system, we are a return-to-parent facility. And so that he can come back to Safe Haven with a 24-hour care and be able to have their child returned to them after foster care. So 13% of that comes from that grant, the funding from the DHS. And then 19% comes from grantors that we write for. And then 25% comes from fundraising. And then 43% comes from individual donors. That includes businesses, individuals, our churches. We also have what we call the 325 Club, which is 300 people giving $25 a month.
So a lot of funding sources there. Does that take up a lot of time just to keep track of all that?
Absolutely. And that's one of my big goals with Safe Haven is working with our donor base. We actually just went through this great training with Murdoch up in Portland. And I just got off a call with the leader with that. And where we're learning, how do we care? How do we support even our donors who are giving sometimes out of their need to help us? So we really want to care well for our donors, being able to reach out to people, give tours of the home, get sit down with coffee with them and explain what Safe Haven does and how it impacts our community.
So for the women and children that you're helping, how long are they often with you, or maybe even post being at your facility, still receiving some assistance?
So we require women, we ask them to be there a minimal of 3 months. 3 months is a good fitting to get them started on the program process of change. But on average, I'd say about 6 to 8 months is how long a woman usually stays at Safe Haven. We have had some stay longer during COVID. I think our longest was almost 2 years that they were at the facility. With the housing crisis the way that it is, it's hard for women to find ongoing housing. And it's a tight competition to those who have jobs and work. With our women who are receiving state benefits or limited income, they really struggle to find ongoing housing. So we don't want to kick them out because they've come to the end of the program and they have nowhere to go. But we see about a year in living in Safe Haven, they almost get that teenager, I need to leave, everything's better out of mom's house. So they want to get out, they want to expand, they want to get back on their own. Afterwards, we have our aftercare system that was in there. We've had women in there for as long as they want to be in there. We have different varied levels. If they want ongoing support, we come in once a week, checking in with them. We have some moms who just want us to come in and do drug testing on them because it holds them accountable. They can tell their friends, hey, listen, I get drug tested, I can't do anything. So we had some women that have been in this program for, they've been out for 10 years and they still call back us back and ask for support and help.
Wow. So a very long-term possibility there. Now, while they are at Safe Haven, what kinds of services are they receiving?
So one is our residential program. So that's the obvious one. They live there, they have a safe place. I remember a mom coming in and she shared that she had to go down to Love's to take a shower because she had no running water. So just the simple thing of being able to have access to a shower on a daily basis that we take for granted is something that really helps them be able to make those avenues of change. We also have a life skills program. I'm very happy that we've actually hired Carla Gamble. She's been a longtime counselor here in Douglas County. And so she has come on board and she's leading our classes. We have in-home classes where we talk about abuse. We talk about addiction. We talk about what are the things that brought us to this place and how do we build a plan around so we don't go back to where we came from. So that's our life skills program with Carla. It's been really key to be able to give them the foundation to prevent them from relapse. We also have a transportation program where we drive women around. I have some staff that they don't ever get out of the car. They talk about every place they've gone. Mechanics are amazed at how much our little minivan puts on and how much wear and tear goes into a minivan. They are like the soccer moms going everywhere, but on steroids. They're driving everywhere to every appointment, making sure, because these women have limited access to transportation, and that's why they don't get into services. We also offer a healthy lifestyle program. So that's being able to teach them how to cook, how to shop in a healthy way. You take your food stamps, how can we stretch this and so that you can provide a healthy meal for your family with the limited resources you have. We teach gardening, we teach exercise, how do you move your body and have that self-care that you can take care of yourself through moving your body. And then the aftercare is what I talked about. That's our fifth program. That's after the program, after they've lived. We want to be able to offer them support because some of these people do not have parents. They don't have someone they can call to that are safe, healthy people. So we become the parents, the surrogate grandparents. They call when they need something, when they have a simple question about child rearing.
So I imagine a lot of these women come out of situations, as you mentioned. If you have a family, it's dysfunctional and it may not even be all that helpful sometimes. And a lot of times you look around, you've got severed relationships and you're not sure where to turn.
Exactly. And that's what our hope is that they would always have someone to turn to and come and just even to process through and talk through the different issues they're going through.
You know, the housing part is an interesting piece that comes up in so many interviews, including one we did with one of the lawmakers in Salem this morning about, you know, when you have a limited income, especially if you're on your own, you have a child, you're trying to figure out how to make that work, and it's a struggle.
It's a real struggle. We had a mom that, when Archie Creek broke out, she had some felonies. We finally got into an apartment, and I can't blame the apartment owners. They had a choice between taking an Archie Creek fire victim or my mom. The Archie Creek victim had a steady job. They had no criminal history. And so my client lost her housing time and time again because I can't, no fault to the landlord.
Wow. A lot to talk about more when we come back on Inside Douglas County. The interview, a podcast after 1 at 541radio.com, 1245 News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. Lars Larson coming up on the program at 1 o'clock on Inside Douglas County tomorrow. We'll talk to State Senator David Brock Smith ahead of legislative days and also the called special session of the Oregon State Legislature later in this week. Michael Rondeau of the Cow Creek Umpqua Tribe will be on. And we are still working on getting Congressman Cliff Bentz on later in the week as well. Plus, we'll be live out at the Christmas Fair on Friday. We're talking about Safe Haven Maternity Home. The executive director, Evan Kubar, is in with us this afternoon. We're just talking about all the services that you receive. And it sounds like even when some of the women move on and are not directly receiving services, you've really kind of created a long-term relationship.
Yes, relationship is actually one of our key values that we hold. It's kind of what sets us apart, is being able to have relationship. I had a woman once tell me that she felt that we gave her humanity back because she had been doing so many drugs, different abuse, different things done to her. She didn't feel like she was a human anymore in society, and she actually felt like a human again. That just seems like a basic right, to feel like a human, feel respected. And so that's relationship, creating that relationship where we're able to come alongside a woman. And there's many times I don't agree with their decisions or their morals or things they do, but knowing that we can accept them where they are has made an impact in their lives, because people generally do not accept them the way they are.
So how many women are you able to help at a time? I mean, your facility's got limited space.
We are 6 to 8 women. So what I usually tell people is if we have 8 women and 8 toddlers, I will have every staff resignation on my desk, because 8 toddlers is a lot for a small house. We have a 3,000 square foot house. So I look at what we have. If we have more pregnant women, we can go up closer to 8. We also look with different varied issues like mental health and addiction. So if we have certain things going on in the house, I would not want to pair a woman who's struggling, coming out of domestic violence, with severe mental health. I wouldn't want to put her in a position where she's with a roommate where she's struggling. So it varies anywhere between 6 and 8 at a time.
And how many staff do you have?
We have 12 staff in total.
Wow. So what kinds of things are they doing in the course of an average day?
We like to say there's no such thing as an average day at Safe Haven. So what would an average day would be is they are going to be transporting between programs, between court, going to meetings, taking them into AA, NA, or Celebrate Recovery. We really encourage them to find resources outside of Safe Haven, outside the agency, outside the court, that they can pair with, so that when they are in recovery and they're out, they'll have just a whole plethora of people on their tribe that's kind of supporting them. They're also helping women with cooking meals and helping them plan menus. We help them with taking care of their children. If they go to a meeting, a class, we're able to help watch their children. We are helping, giving them parenting advice. Sometimes they come, what should I do in this situation? What should we do here? And then we also have one staff. We also have a clothing closet. So her only job is she runs a clothing closet where we do giveaways. And I think a couple weeks ago she had a coat giveaway and saw over 200 people in attendance at that event.
Wow. Well, a lot of kind of areas of need there. And for the kids that are there, what's the age range?
We have anywhere from when they're still in vitro all the way up to, we try to say 3, and we like to pretend that we have a hard, fast line and we hold that. But then we look at these cases and we always think we can make an exception. But 3 is about the limit, because as you're in a small house, again, 3,000 square foot, as the child gets older, it just becomes really hard on the child themselves to be in such a closed-in area with a lot of people around.
Are you able to get the kids and maybe the moms as well out just for, you know, going to a park and things like that?
We love to get them out. We would like to partner with Wildlife Safari, with parks, with a bowling alley. We really try to show how to have family healthy activities where they can learn how do they take their kids. What are some things that are free? The walkthrough is free. It's a free thing to do, and go take your child to run off energy.
Wow. So you've got you were talking about fundraising at the front end of things. Mm-hmm. You've got a special event coming up. It's a ways off, but you're already putting it out there for folks. Taste of Italy. Tell us about that.
Yes, the Taste of Italy is our annual event. We're the 11th annual, and we put it out because we sell out usually by the beginning of January. We're starting to sell out on our seats. So it comes on Saturday, March 8th. We're at the Douglas County Fairgrounds. We open the doors at 5 o'clock. And we have, you know, the normal social mixer. We have the auction items, the live and the silent. We also have a great dessert run where we have some quality bakers in the area, and people get really competitive over their cakes here in Douglas County.
Are people actually running to get dessert?
Oh, no, people run. It's like Black Friday sometimes, you know, it's people, you know, especially if your cake is there and you're third in line, you're going to push people out and you're in the other side of the room. People there's a lot of strategic planning into this.
We'll have to listen for that on the police logs.
Oh yes, it may be so.
And what else goes on during the course of the night?
And then we bring in a couple of firmware clients. We actually have some different, even maybe some family members coming in and sharing their story, how Safe Haven has supported them, what has changed in their lives, where they're at now. And it takes a lot of strength to stand up before a crowd full of about 250 strangers and bear your yuckiest, horrible time of your life and share with everyone. But it's really inspirational to see the change. We also be able to let people partner with us and be able to just to donate and give. And we're just amazed about how much this community is willing to support and stand behind us. Our goal is 100,000 this year. So we look through just at the event, but also through sponsorship ahead of time.
Wow. And apparently some Italian food may be in play here.
Yes. We have Douglas County Fairgrounds. They're catering. They do a wonderful meal with us with Italian food.
And how many years have you done this?
This is our 11th year, which we didn't count COVID. It's 1 year we had a miss because of COVID. We should have been on our 12th, but 11th year of doing this.
And how much are tickets? How do people get them?
So tickets, you can go to our website, safehavenmaternity.org, and just right there on our homepage, we've got a link where you can click to purchase tickets. They are $85 a person, or if you want a table of eight, they're $550. We also have opportunities to, if you wanted to sponsor, we've got a couple great sponsors, Umpqua Dairy and Umpqua Health Alliance, that have partnered with us to support and go on with this event, and we're always open for more sponsorships.
So putting together this event probably takes a fair amount of time.
It takes a lot of time. I usually give myself about 3 months break after the last one, and then I start the next year.
Wow. So that is going on again. What's the date?
It is March 8th, Saturday, March 8th.
All right. And a couple minutes left on the program here on Inside Douglas County. As you look back over the past 6 years of leading Safe Haven, what are some of the kind of the bright spots?
The bright spots is going to be seeing lives change, getting an email from a woman, getting a phone call from a woman saying, hey, I haven't talked about that, about what's happened, but here's what's happened in my life. It's been amazing. I think one of the bright spots happens, too, is when a woman leaves not in great terms and you think, OK, we failed. This didn't work out. They didn't get their life turned around. And to come to find out, OK, I left Safe Haven. That was the low spot of my life. And I didn't leave in good terms, I know that, but because of Safe Haven, because of my time there, the things that I did learn during that time, this is how my life's changed. I'm sober, I'm living outside, I have my child's growing, we're doing great. And knowing that those times we thought were failures, those times we thought that didn't work, okay, this didn't work out, nothing's working out with this client, to realize that even that little bit of hope, the little bit of time that we put in actually made a difference, that's probably been the biggest impact on me, is even more than the ones we see right away, the fruits, the ones that I did not see later on.
What about some of the tougher things about this job?
Addiction is horrible. It's that monster. It's the demon on the shoulder to see women go back to addiction, to back to relationships, back to things that we know. And sometimes it's hard. You want to scream, I know the answer. I know that this isn't good for you. We can see it. But there's free will, and women have to have the choice to do what they want. And sometimes it is going back to that. We have lost women. We have lost children to addiction. So those are probably the things that haunt you at night. When you know that someone's gone back, having to talk a woman out of going back to her trafficker and then watch her go back to her trafficker and never hear again. And so you always wonder, where did those women go? What happened to them?
Are you able to network with similar type organizations other places?
We do. We have a great relationship with Crossroads. So we work with their their case manager, Amy, there, and she works really closely with us to be able to take women straight from there. The moment she gets a pregnant woman in, I'm probably about her first call that she makes. And so we really work to try to get the women straight from Crossroads, from that treatment in there. I also work with Mandy Rigsby really closely over at UHA, trying to be able to support her clientele, the pregnant women who are using. We work, again, DHS, we've been very closely worked with them. We're part of a Teens for Family group that we're able to staff hard cases together.
And if people want to find out more about Safe Haven Maternity Center, how do they get connected?
They can visit our website, safehavenmaternity.org, or they can stop by where our office is located on Chestnut Street. We're all more than welcome for people to drop in and hear more about what we do.
All right, Safe Haven Maternity Home Executive Director Abby Kumar, thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
1257 News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN, a daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. It's presented by Concrete Builder Supply. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it around and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Stay connected with local news and information. News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.